Coming up on the Hockey News pregame show, Lindy Ruff is out. Travis Green, can he save the Devils?
In a year with so many contenders, how important is it to finish first in your division?
And joining us from Pittsburgh, we've got Penguins site editor Nick Horwat on whether the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to trade Jake Guentzel.
I'm Ryan Kennedy.
I'm Michael Trikos, and this is the Hockey News pregame show, brought to you by Upper Deck. What is up, hockey fans? I'm Michael Trikos. This is Ryan Kennedy, and welcome to the Hockey News pregame show. We've got a big episode for you today. Let's start off with the New Jersey Devils, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Lindy Ruff, mercifully, is out as head coach. Travis Green slides over from the associate coach's role back to the head coaching position, something that he hasn't done since the Vancouver Canucks were his team. And what do we make of this change, and you know, can Travis Green lead the Devils back into the playoffs where they probably rightfully belong?
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a tough year for the Devils because a couple of major things have gone wrong. One, Dougie Hamilton has only played 20 games this season, and he's their number one defenseman.
As per usual, Ryan.
If he had even played 40 games, they'd be a playoff team right now, right?
Good point.
And goaltending has let them down. Now, the lack of Dougie Hamilton and his possession numbers and defense probably play a little bit of a part in that, but I think there's an acknowledgement here that it's desperate times in New Jersey.
And
they are definitely pushing for, like, they're not giving up. They're pushing for that playoff spot. It's probably going to be a wild card spot unless they catch Philly for that third ranking in the Metro. But I think this is a situation where GM Tom Fitzgerald said, okay, well, we need a shakeup. We can't just rely on the trade deadline because who knows what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. They need wins immediately. So if you can get that new coach bounce, you got to try anything at this point.
Yeah, I don't necessarily blame Lindy Ruff for what's going on, just because you mentioned goaltending. What is a coach supposed to do? Injuries, what is a coach supposed to do?
Yep.
At the same time, the Devils, you know, arguably overachieved last year with a young roster that was maybe ahead of its time.
Yeah.
You would expect that young team, after they dispose of the Rangers in the first round, which was, I call it an upset. I don't know about you.
Oh, for sure.
I would expect them to take that next step this year, and those young players who maybe aren't so young anymore when we're talking about Nico and Jack Hughes, to take an extra step, and even regardless of what the goaltending situation looks like or what the injury situation looks like, they still have so many pieces back there where these guys should be, you know, taking that next step and becoming, you know, after you reach the second round, go to the conference final. So this has been a real disappointing year for the Devils. And I would say, even despite the injuries and the goaltending, this is an underachieving team.
Yeah, and, you know, something that I saw online the other day that was interesting was, what has been the impact of Andrew Brunette not being part of Lindy Ruff's staff? Brunette, obviously the head coach in Nashville now. Predators are red hot. We're going to talk about them later. But was there something in that alchemy of that staff that worked, that when you took out Brunette, all of a sudden you were missing a big component? And, you know, I mean, the Devils, they can score. Can't defend this year. Can't keep the puck out of their net. That's a big thing. So
yeah, what did we had Christie on last week. What was it? 72% of the games they've given up the first goal.
Yeah,
that's a crazy stat.
Especially when you don't have a lock it down goaltender, right? Like, you can have a goaltender that gives up the first goal, and then, you know, at the All-Star game, talking to Rick Tocchet about Thatcher Demko, he was like, yeah, sometimes he gets us a shutout. Sometimes he'll give up, you know, three or four goals, but he doesn't give up that fifth goal, and we come back and win.
Right.
The Devils don't have that goaltender right now.
No. The question is, are they going to get that goaltender? And we've got the trade deadline a couple days away. Obviously, the Devils have been linked to, hey, let's face it, they've been linked to Connor Hellebuyck back in the offseason.
Right,
so they've always been kind of on the hunt for a legit number one goaltender. Didn't get it in the offseason. Are they going to get it at the trade deadline? And I'm looking down the options right now. Jacob Markstrom may not even be available if he doesn't want to move his no-trade clause. You mentioned Nashville a bit there. Do you trade UC Saros if you're the Nashville Predators? I don't think so right now.
I don't think so either. I mean, like I say, they've won 8 straight games. They're knocking on the door in the playoffs, and you know they're in a pretty good position right now for the wild card. You have to put faith in your troops, right? Like, if they're playing well like this, and let's not forget, they didn't have to trade UC Saros. It's not like he was, like, you know, begging to leave town or anything like that.
The fact that his name was being mentioned in rumors, I was shocked about.
That was pretty wild in the first place. You're totally right. So for Nashville now, I think it's just a matter of, no, we're cool. Like, Saros is definitely our number one and has been for years now. The fact that they're getting these wins and that they're putting together this great streak at a time when some other teams are flagging in the West, I think it just, you know, cements the fact that it's like, no, this is our team. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, a new regime coming in, you know, Barry Trotz as the GM. It's good for him. You know, like, the moves he made in the summer were not rebuilding moves.
No, I remember talking to him for our yearbook piece, and I said, hey, you got Ryan O'Reilly, you got Luke Shen, and his answer was, yeah, we're not getting these guys as a place or a destination for them to retire. This isn't like a country club where, like, this isn't Boca Raton or something where you're coming to Nashville and it's like, okay, yeah, you had a great career, now just settle in and listen to some country music. He's like, you know, he's a proud guy. Mm-hmm. And for him to go out from the coaching or behind the bench to the managerial role, there's nothing more than he wants than just to, you know, turn this Nashville team around and say, yeah, playoffs in year one.
Yeah.
So I don't see them being sellers at all.
No, I don't either. And, you know, like, they just re-signed Tommy Novak, who's having a great year for them. So things are working out well for the Preds. And I think you got to just stay the course at this point. And hey, if the wheels fall off and you don't make the playoffs, at least you were playing important games all the way to the end. But as it looks now, it feels like they're a wild card team.
Okay, so let's get back to the Devils. If Markstrom's not there, and I guess he would be the top of your list if
he's available. Sure.
Okay,
yeah.
If Markstrom's not there, Saros is not there, who, if you're Tom Fitzgerald, do you circle and go after hard?
Wow.
When it comes to a goaltender.
I mean, it's tough, right? Because it feels like Marc-Andre Fleury's off the market.
Yeah. Shrinking market.
It's a really shrinking market.
It looked like a week ago that this was just going to be goalies going here, going there.
Yeah.
And hey, who wants a goaltender? You get a goaltender. You get a goaltender.
Yeah.
And now it's like, who's available? Is it Jake Allen? Is it Elvis Merzlikins?
Yeah, Kaapo Kähkönen.
These aren't legit number ones.
No, I mean, maybe you roll the dice on Merzlikins and say, okay, well, if he gets hot for a bit, that's fine. I don't think he's the long-term solution.
Yeah,
I think, ideally for the Devils, you get sort of a placeholder, and maybe Merzlikins is that placeholder, and then you hope that Akira Schmid, who was your savior in the playoffs last year, mm-hmm. but still a developing goaltender, still very much a prospect in a lot of ways, you hope that he has a good summer and has a good start to next season, and maybe he's your guy, and Vanecek is more of that, like, 1B or even the backup that he's probably, you know, best suited to be.
Could Jake Allen kind of fit a good role in that regard? Because I saw you're tweeting about Jake Allen, and, you know, experienced guy.
Yeah.
You got to remember, he was riding shotgun with Jordan Binnington when the year that the St. Louis Blues won the Cup. And it was Jake Allen's team for the first half of the year. And he took a backseat role to Binnington and didn't hear any rumblings like that was
no controversy.
No controversy.
Yeah.
And you see what he's doing in Montreal. He's working with Samuel Montembeau and the young goaltenders there, whether it's Caden Primeau.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be interested in a Jake Allen kind of filling that sort of mentor / I can settle the troops down kind of role?
Yeah, the only thing at this point is that you need somebody to get hot right away. So is Jake Allen the kind of guy that can, like, rip off a streak like that? And, like, if you're looking at a Montreal goaltender, like, Montembeau would be more of that sort of, okay, you know, I'm not saying he's like a top-tier netminder, but I could see Montembeau getting hot for a couple of weeks and, you know, getting them those wins. With Allen, if you were going to do this, it probably would have been more at the beginning of the season where you say, okay, like, you know, Vanecek's not going to get it done, so let's go with a Schmid-Allen tandem, and Allen can kind of be that, like, like you say, that mentor that can kind of coach him up a bit and be there and take, you know, a number of starts off his plate, and you know you're in pretty good shape. So if Schmid has those ups and downs, you don't have to worry about it as much.
Real quick, what do you make of Jonathan Quick re-signing with the New York Rangers? After what, it's been a really great year for him.
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think he was so key for them early on when Igor Shesterkin was a bit more up and down than we're used to. It feels like Shesterkin's a little more locked in now, but being able to get that rest so that Shesterkin can carry the mail in the playoffs is great. And hey, if something happens, you know Quick is a great playoff goaltender. He seems to love the area, too. I've been to both Rangers games in Toronto this year. He was wearing a mid-Fairfield Blues toque after the game, repping not New York. That's more of a Connecticut thing, but obviously he likes that area. So yeah,
it's pretty much tied together.
He loves it. They love him. It's perfect.
Awesome. Well, you're going to love this next segment we got up for you. We've got Nick Horwat joining us from Pittsburgh to talk about the Penguins. They are going to be an active trade seller at the deadline. Stick with us.
Hey there, this is Ryan Kennedy, editor-in-chief of the Hockey News, and Future Watch is out now. Our annual look at NHL prospect pipelines. We have our cover story, the St. Louis Blues, and we rank the top 100 drafted prospects in hockey. So check it out now, thn.com/free or in your mailbox. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show, and we are joined now by Pittsburgh Penguins site editor Nick Horwat. And Nick, everything is happening in Pittsburgh right now. We got the deadline looming. We got players in and out of the lineup. Let's just start there. What's the health situation around the Penguins right now? Because we heard Noel Acciari maybe a little banged up.
Yeah, Noel Acciari is going to be out against the Blue Jackets tonight. He was rolled out. He's still being evaluated for an upper body injury. We're not exactly sure the extent of that it could go, because he did finish the game in Edmonton, that disaster of a game in Edmonton. But he'll be out. Chanson Harkins is going to be a game time decision, likely meaning he's in. He didn't finish the game in Edmonton, so there's that little aspect. And other than that, Brian Rust is still on IR. He's working his way back. He skated with Jake Guentzel before the morning skate this morning. Jake Guentzel obviously is on LTIR until after the trade deadline, so who knows if he even plays here anymore after that. And Matt Nieto is still, he's been out of lineup for a while now, still recovering from his knee surgery. And other than that, it's a normal Penguin season where everyone is getting injured at the right at the exact right time.
I was going to say, it's just such an odd time to be a Pittsburgh Penguin right now. Like, you were writing about this the other day, Nick, that it seems like, aside from the core, which is Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson, and I guess a Rust because of his injury situation, everyone is up for grabs, it feels like, when that Penguins lineup. And that includes Noel Acciari, as long as this injury is nothing crazy long-term. But how much of a change do you think this roster is going to undergo in the next few days?
The next few days, it'll be hard to make a ton of changes in the next few days unless Kyle Dubas has a bunch of phone calls ready to be made. They had a complete day off yesterday, and I was pretty much expecting something to happen yesterday just with how bad that road trip was. But no movements other than Matthew Fields getting placed on waivers, and maybe that is kind of a precursor to the amount of moves that are coming. I mean, other than, you're right, the core of Crosby, Malkin, Letang, Carlson, you can add Rust into there because of a full no move. Josh Yoey at The Athletic added on that Pettersson might be in that conversation as well of the Penguins wanting him to stay. And when it comes to the goaltending, I mean, Jari might be in conversations, but Kyle Dubas have to be blown away for Jari to be moved. But other than that, everyone, it seems, is up for grabs.
Get down to brass tacks here. Jake Guentzel has been obviously the big name in the rumor mill. First off, do you think that he will get moved at the deadline? And if he does get moved, what is the general price going to be, or what's the return going to be for Guentzel? Is it a first rounder, a prospect, and a player? What are you thinking right now?
I would assume he does get moved before Friday comes. For the return, I know Kyle Dubas and the Penguins want prospects to come in. They want guys that can help a, not a rebuild necessarily, but start that transition to building a winning team next year. And I'm assuming a first round pick would still be a part of it just because they also should be building for the future. But when it comes to the prospects, they're going to want one or two names that can help the lineup for the rest of this year and mostly into next year. So I would say the return could be a first round pick should be included, and then high name prospects from wherever he ends up.
That's the thing, because you've got Crosby there, and I don't think Crosby is down with a full rebuild.
Doesn't seem like it.
No. So the pieces that come back, I almost feel like they've got to be able to help Pittsburgh next year and in the coming years to get them back into the playoffs. Like, I almost view this as Dubas's chance to do like a 1 year retool, reset, as you will. Like, how much pressure is Dubas? And like, is this even possible? You've watched this Penguins team all year. I actually thought they would be closer to a playoff spot. I thought they'd be a wild card team. So I'm a little surprised at how they fared this year. But, you know, if you're Kyle Dubas, is it possible to kind of make the changes that were kind of expected for this Penguins team?
It's possible. It's just going to take a lot of work. And I'm with you. I thought this Penguins team could become a playoff team, whether it be through finding their way into the top three of the Metro or by wild card. But, I mean, there's still a positive goal differential somehow. The only team out of the playoffs that are in the green in that category, but I mean, they know how to score. At least the top six knows how to score. That bottom six hasn't been able to do anything except for play defense, and the defense has been pretty bad. Ryan Graves seems like almost like a complete failure, but he's got years left to right the ship, because I don't believe he'll be moved anywhere because no one's going to take on that contract. And the goaltending has stood out for the Penguins this year, which is a big positive revelation, but again, it's coming at the hands of, you know, a bunch of guys not scoring. And I mean, Sidney Crosby's leading the way and deserved as much, you know, MVP talk as he got. But without a playoff push, that conversation's out the window as well.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Dubas, what would you say the temperature is like for him in the eyes of fans so far? I mean, it hasn't even been a full season, but – you know, I mean, this is a results-oriented business, and obviously he came in with a lot of hype from Toronto. How are fans feeling about Dubas right now?
I would say Pittsburgh is a spoiled fan base, but they're also a smart fan base, and there's still a lot of resentment for what Ron Hextall caused this team. So the temperature for Dubas isn't really all that warm. A lot of people are kind of realizing he came into a mess, and he wasn't going to be able to fix it overnight. They thought maybe a season could fix it, so I'd say there's a fair bit of, you know, heat toward Dubas in that he hasn't made the right moves yet, and he's waited too long to sort of salvage this season. But right when Dubas said he's going to let the team decide, the first time he said he's going to let the team decide what direction to go in, they rifled off a couple of good wins and looked like they could be fighting for a playoff spot. And then he said, once again, I'm going to let the team decide. And then this is now it's happening. So the sale is likely coming. It just took the team making that decision to finally happen. And I'd say that the fan base is still confident in him, and there's still just a lot of resentment for what Ron Hextall brought to this team too.
Real quick, Nick, buyer's remorse regarding Erik Karlsson. Now that we've had some time to kind of evaluate it, do you think the Penguins do that deal again, knowing what they know now, or has it been sort of not really the issue?
I bet they would still do it. I think, again, he's been a hot topic on Twitter, Erik Karlsson. Half of the fan base believes that he's been a disaster for this team, whereas the other half believe that he's been great. I'm going to fall into the idea of that he's been a pretty good asset. He's been a pretty good player for this team. He's leading defenseman on the team in points. And at the beginning of the year, he had some good defensive acumen, and it's not really the same anymore, but he and Marcus Patterson have formed a great pair. And I mean, I don't think the Penguins really brought Erik Karlsson in to be the magic piece that brings the power play to life, and obviously that hasn't happened. So I would say that Erik Karlsson is still a useful player and has been good this year. It's just been kind of a disaster all around him, especially in the defensive core. Chris Letang is still really good. Erik Karlsson's been great, and Marcus Patterson has turned into a must keep on this team, whereas everyone else has been pretty not great.
Fair enough. All right, Nick. Well, we know there's going to be a lot of excitement around Pittsburgh in the coming days. And we got a lot of excitement on the show still to come. So stick with us on the Hockey News Pregame Show. Hey there, everybody. This is Ryan Kennedy, Editor-in-Chief of the Hockey News, and I have a new web column, Future Watch Weekly, that you should keep an eye out for. Every week, I look at the developmental world of hockey from NCAA, Major Junior, all points in between. So check it out every Friday morning at THN.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News Pregame Show. And Ryan, big news coming out of the PWHL this week, where our correspondent, Ian Kennedy, reports that the NHL is using the Women's League as a sort of testing ground for a bunch of new rules, and I might add exciting new rules.
Yes.
One of those rules allows the top-seeded team in each of the conferences to pick their opponent, which, if it gets applied to the NHL this year, oh my God, what a year it would be, because if there was ever a year where you want to finish first, it is this year. In the Atlantic, you do not want to be second or third. In the Central, you don't want to be second and third. In the Pacific, you might argue with me here, but I don't think you want to be second and third as well.
The Pacific's weird right now because Vegas is in free fall.
Yeah.
So if we had had this conversation last week, I would have been like, yeah, because it was looking like it was going to be Vegas, Edmonton, two and three. Now, I almost wonder if, unless the Golden Knights pull out of this tailspin, do you not want to finish first? Because what if you're, Vancouver and Vegas is the wild card team that you have to face? It's like, oh, we did all this work and now we have to face the defending champs who are probably getting healthy as the playoffs begin.
Yeah.
No thanks. But it's a great point overall that, especially for me, the Central for sure, because you have Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado. All three of those teams could win the Stanley Cup. One of those teams, at least, is going out in the first round. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, and if you get, like you said, in the Pacific, if I was going to pick my opponent, I want to play Nashville. Or I want to play, I don't know if St. Louis is going to catch one of those teams. Mm. But, I might even want to play Vancouver just because I'm not completely sold on the Canucks.
Ooh. So. What do you think they lack?
Experience.
Okay, fair enough. So if that Vegas Vancouver potential, that would be sort of your nightmare scenario if you're a Canucks fan.
Yeah, I don't want to play Vegas just because they won the Stanley Cup, Ryan, which I think a lot of people are sleeping on.
It's true.
They don't feel like they get the respect of a Stanley Cup defending champion. It feels like everyone's just fixated on Colorado and
Florida, maybe at this point,
Carolina, Dallas. So let's start here. Let's go right to the Atlantic because this came up last night during the Leafs-Bruins game. In the first intermission, Colby Armstrong from Sportsnet runs an old clip of Leaf fans chanting, "We want the Bruins" or "We want Boston." Turns out he was just having a little fun because, the Leafs...
It was an old clip.
It was an old clip.
Yeah, it was like from a year ago or something.
But the Leafs, do they want Boston or do they want the Florida Panthers, if you are the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round?
I still think Boston is a better matchup for them.
Even with the Demons.
Even with the Demons. Well, they got Florida Demons now, too.
They got Demons everywhere.
They got Demons everywhere. Yeah. But you look at Florida, and it's just a bad matchup because Florida's so physical. They're playing so well right now. Great decor. The goaltending we've seen can be lights out. Mm-hmm. The Bruins, full marks to them. They've been great all season.
Yeah.
And yes, they did end up beating the Leafs last night pretty handily. But
6 straight times they beat Toronto.
Wow. And I know that Toronto, the power play has just been like nothing against the Bruins. So that's something, but you can learn from that, right? If I'm not mistaken, a couple of years ago, the Leafs swept Boston in the regular season and then lost to them in the playoffs. So you get that familiarity.
Yeah.
And if you learn the right lessons, then you can rebound from that. So it's really pick your poison if you're the Leafs.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like Florida is just this, death machine right now. And the Leafs, I mean, they got tougher, but Boston just, it feels like they'd have a better chance against them in the first round at least.
Yeah, I go the other way. I'll take the Panthers just because I'm not sold on Sergei Bobrovsky being able to do what he did in the playoffs back-to-back years.
Right.
And we were talking about this before. You either get a bad Bobrovsky in the regular season who turns it on in the playoffs, or you get one that's really good in the regular season who completely just
falls apart.
Fair
enough.
So let's go into the Central. So obviously you don't want to play, you don't want to be in the second or the third seed.
No.
So what's a tougher matchup? Is it Winnipeg against Colorado or is it Winnipeg against Dallas? And we're just kind of focused on more of the Canadian teams here. Right now, you know, Winnipeg and Dallas are locked in for first place. It might go down to the final game of the season where we don't know who's going to win that division.
Yeah. Winnipeg-Dallas would be a very interesting matchup because it's like the Rick Bonus Bowl, you know?
Oh, right.
Because he coached Dallas. He's coaching Winnipeg now.
Yeah.
So it'd be very interesting to see how that played out because you have two teams that obviously are very comfortable playing low-scoring games. Ultimately, I think I would take Dallas in that series. So if you're Winnipeg, I mean,
I would rather face the Colorado Avalanche if I'm Winnipeg. Know why?
Goaltending. Yeah, I would agree with you there. As crazy as it sounds, because you don't like facing McKinnon and Makar and all those guys, Rantanen. But
you might be able to nullify that with Connor Hellebuck.
You might be able to. So yeah, as crazy as it sounds, Jets might want the Avs.
Yeah, that is a crazy scenario. And then if we're going back to the Pacific here, obviously I don't. Okay, here's the question. Does anyone even chase down Vancouver for the top spot?
Edmonton could if Stuart Skinner plays to the level that we've seen him, you know, when Chris Knobloch first took over and Skinner was running wild for them in net. I mean, everything was going right for the Oilers until the All-Star break, and then they kind of fell back down to earth. But I think Edmonton could catch them. It's not likely, but it's a possibility.
Me personally, I just want to see Edmonton against Vegas again.
Yeah.
I like the Jack and Connor kind of head-to-head battle. I know it's like, it's not even a debate. Like, we're not talking like, oh, who should they have picked?
Right,
who's
right.
the better player or anything? Yeah. We know Connor McDavid is the greatest player.
Yeah.
Might go down as the greatest player ever. So that's not a debate. But I still think that, I think for the same reason why I think Eichel is always fixated on McDavid and always feels like he's in his shadow, I think that, you know, if I'm Connor McDavid and I see Jack Eichel finally win a cup ahead of McDavid,
right?
There's got to be something there.
Yeah, Jack Eichel has never lost an NHL playoff series.
That's funny, isn't
that's
it?
That's a fact. Yeah, that's
took
a fact.
Took him a while to get there, though. Took him a while to get.
Hey, they don't ask you, you know, how long. They just he's got the ring.
We didn't talk about the Metro and whether this sort of thing holds true. If you want to be first or second or third, do you think it matters? Because I don't know if there's a little bit more parity.
There's a lot of parity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it really matters in the Metro because you got Carolina and the Rangers, and then you got a lot of other teams. You know, mm-hmm. The Flyers are the great story, and then you have a lot of like bad stories, right? Like Pittsburgh, Washington, New Jersey. It's like these are all teams that hoped they were going to be better, depending on your external expectations, but. Yeah, I think Carolina and the Rangers are kind of they're in a class of their own.
I almost want to be second or third, I think, in the Metro. Because if I'm the first place team, the New York Rangers, I might have to play the Tampa Bay Lightning or even the Detroit Red Wings.
Yeah.
And say what you want about Detroit and the fact that they haven't been in the playoffs in 7 years. They got Patrick Kane playing Showtime hockey.
Yep.
And they've got nothing to lose, really. Yeah. They're almost playing with house money.
Yeah, I agree. They're like the Devils last year.
And then with Tampa Bay, it's just, you know, flip that switch and they're back to Stanley Cup.
Vasilevsky. Yep.
Real quick, a couple of the other rules that are being showcased in the PWHL is the gold rule, where once a team is eliminated mathematically from playoff contention, they start accruing points towards a draft pick. And the team with the most points from the time they're mathematically eliminated to the end of the season would get the number one pick.
Mm.
Had that happened last year, Vancouver Canucks might have ended up with Connor Bedard. Do we like this rule?
I personally don't, just because if you're rebuilding, you want to play your kids at the end of the year, mm-hmm. and this would dissuade teams from doing that.
Okay, I love it. So, after the break, we've got more Hockey News pregame show. Stick with us. Hi, I'm Michael Trikos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com.
Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show brought to you by Upper Deck. Speaking of which, we have special guest Ed Spiker from Upper Deck here. And Ed, tomorrow, momentous day, Series 2 of Upper Deck dropping, including the vaunted Connor Bedard card that everyone is waiting for. So let's just start off there. How excited are you about Series 2 and all the Connor Bedard card buzz we're hearing?
It's been amazing. I'm about 5 years in here, and by far and away, this is the most anticipated release of my time here. You know, every year, Upper Deck Series, the entire series, but especially Series 1 and Series 2, are always highly anticipated. Of course, Young Guns are the most anticipated Young Guns card or rookie cards that we have. And but this one just exceeds all expectations. You know, we've been thrilled. Everybody here is super excited. There's a buzz in the building. There's a buzz in the collecting world. And so, yeah, we couldn't be more excited and eager for tomorrow's release.
Is there any reason why the Bedard one is like that much more anticipated than, you know, we've seen highly touted rookies come into the league pretty much every year now.
Yeah.
Obviously Bedard is something special, but is there anything else behind it?
No, I mean, it's a combination of two things really. It's, you know, the anticipation of him, what he's done in the junior level with Team Canada. He's been an exceptional player. He's shown basically everything that, you know, when he heading into the draft, of course, he was clear cut number one. I mean, I think people just look at the skill set, but then on top of that is the way he's performed since he's been in the league. And he's had a fantastic season. Unfortunately, he did lose a few weeks there due to the broken jaw. But the numbers he's put up, especially on a team that is struggling a bit, right? There's not a ton of talent around him at the moment. And so to put up the numbers that he's put up and to show his, you know, he's got good poise, his shot, his wrist shot's phenomenal. He's just got a natural gift. And so I think that's kind of what set him apart from previous rookies where, you know, the hype has been backed up by the play.
Now, a player that I'm sure you're hearing a lot about these days from a card perspective is Matt Rempe from the New York Rangers, who I mean, it's just been a huge whirlwind since he made his debut at the Stadium Series where he fought Matt Martin. Can you just take us through the sort of process of when fans could expect a Matt Rempe card? Because obviously it's not Series 2, but it would have to be next season at this point, correct?
It would. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is production schedules. You know, I think what it takes generally takes about 12 to 14 months for a product to go from the inception, from when we first introduce it in the company and everybody starts working on different aspects of it, to the release. There's so many components to it. And it's a lot more complex than I think most people think, that the making of trading cards. So because of the timing of when we already started on 24-25 Series 1 and Series 2. So we already started working on the building of those products. And so it's those production times combined with the way the season lays out in the release date. So as you know, 24-25 Series 1 will release ideally in November of this year. And so because, you know, there aren't going to be possibly enough rookies that will debut at the start of the 24-25 season. And of course, at that point, you know, it's too late to get them in a product if they're just starting play now. So what we do is we work with the league and the Players Association to set a cutoff date during the previous season. So typically it's in the first 2 weeks of January. And then for after that, that point in time, anybody that debuts in the league is then what we call a holdover rookie. And then we they go into the next season's product. So it's a way for us to ensure that there is a robust young guns checklist in the series one each year.
So Ed, the Matt Rempe card, I presume it will be a game action shot from this year. Can you confirm whether or not he will have a black eye and will he be chucking knuckles in his shot?
No, wouldn't be fighting. He wouldn't be fighting in the shot. Would he have black eyes? I'm not sure. Yeah. We try not to glorify that part. It is an important part of the game.
Fair enough.
But we wouldn't showcase that. Whether I have a black eye, I could not say.
I think there's a pretty good chance that he will.
Yeah. Right? Even if he's just skating down the ice.
If he keeps it up, right? He's had it for at least a couple weeks now. I think both of them, right? Yeah. So if he keeps it up, there's a good chance.
Nice. And, you know, you're talking about already planning for next season. So how, you know, Macklin Celebrini is seen as the clear-cut number one for the 2024 draft. How do you plan for, you know, a player like that where most likely he's going to come out from Boston University to whatever team drafts him? But are you already anticipating Max Celebrini being a card that a lot of people they want that young gun card when it comes out next year?
Absolutely. Yep. And so there's and it's really not in my area, but there are people here that actually work on the strategic placement of subjects or players in not just the young guns checklist but all the checklists. So of course there are other cards in the product that are either rookie based or feature rookies in there. So it's a whole strategy behind when and where players get placed. So are they in series one, series two, or extended? Are they in the young guns checklist in series one and then maybe some other rookie checklist in series two or vice versa? So we have, there's the head of our product development team is the person that is behind the strategy of when people release. And there's a lot of different variables that go into making those decisions. So, Macklin Celebrini is a very exciting prospect. And we really hope that he is skating at the start of next season.
Yeah, I guess that placement is very important. Like we're already seeing that Connor Bedard card was you mentioned $1 million bounty, Ryan.
It's
insane how much not just anticipation, but just like clamor for these cards there are. I guess that's as good as you could expect in terms of publicity around the cards, and just it tells you how feverish people are for these Upper Deck cards.
It really is. We've known that. The timing, and it wasn't really planned. You don't know who the prospects are going to be, how they're going to plan out, and so forth. So we had planned this reconfiguration of the Upper Deck series long time ago. And so, of course, this is the first year in which we've changed the configuration, the number of packs per box, the number of cards per pack, the number of inserts in a pack. And then, of course, we added the four new base set parallels. And of course, three of those are serially numbered. So which means the Young Guns, of course, is a subset of the base set. So we knew going into this season that, the Young Guns numbered at 25, the Young Guns, the one of one Young Guns, especially, were going to be highly sought after. And then it just turned out that, you've got a player like Connor Bedard, who's, a generational talent. And so we knew the excitement around that one of one Young Guns was going to be big. I didn't expect to see $1 million bounty. I thought it would be high, but I didn't expect that. So, it's very exciting, and it's certainly communicating to collectors that, there's something to do here, and it's worthwhile to get the product. And I know it's going to be tough for some people to get it. There is a very high demand.
Indeed. Well, Ed, thanks so much for this. Upper Deck Series 2 drops tomorrow, and next week we're going to be opening some packs live on the show. Hopefully, we get a one-of-one Connor Bedard.
Retire.
We'll retire, yeah.
Well, it was nice to meet you before.
Exactly. We'll just ride off into the sunset. But, yeah, it's fun. Just, the anticipation is big. And thanks so much for being here. And after the break, we got more of the Hockey News pregame show. So stick with us.
Thank you for your time, guys. Take care.
Hi, I'm Michael Trikos, Director of Digital Media, and check out my weekday column called The Morning Take, where I break down the NHL's hottest topics every morning, Monday to Friday, at thehockeynews.com. Welcome back to the Hockey News pregame show, Ryan.
What time is it?
It's rapid fire time.
Yes, my favorite time, although Connor doesn't think so. Producer Connor, you got some questions for us?
I never believe you.
I know.
And yes, of course I have questions for you. This is the best week of the year, or maybe second best behind the trade deadline, not trade deadline, free agency draft, because for some reason that's now in the same week.
Yeah.
Let's start off with trade deadline stuff. There were zero trades Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, which is outrageous. Why has the deadline felt like it's been so slow? And what needs to happen to get the trades moving?
It does feel like dominoes have yet to fall, even though the Chris Tanev deal happened. So you'd figure maybe some other defensemen would go, but I think cap space is big.
Yeah.
And I also think there are some teams that are either overachieving or on the bubble that are saying, well, maybe we stick with things. You know, Philly is talking, you know, we're hearing Sean Walker might re-sign in Philly instead of getting dealt. So,
and Nick Seeler.
And Nick Seeler as well. And then obviously we talked about, you know, Nashville, UC Saros, they might as well keep him at this point because they're red hot. So I think that's part of it, is teams just aren't quite sure where they're at.
I'll add to that and say, like, let's look at the rentals this year. Who are we talking about? Jake Guentzel is your number one guy. After that, what is it, Vladimir Tarasenko?
Yeah.
There's just not that same sort of cachet of rentals available. And, you know, I think once the Guentzel trade happens, and I'm saying it's going to happen now, I think the floodgates just are going to open.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, sticking with the trade deadline, I want your predictions. We're going to set the over-under because it's been a slow deadline. 17.5 trades on deadline day.
Okay. And this is not like the future considerations. This is like legit. There's like at least one player involved that's real. That
yes.
kind of trade. Yeah. I'll take the under, but not by much. I think it'll probably be in the 15-16 range just because of everything going on. So I'll take the under.
Every year it feels like it's more and more a dud. Mm-hmm. And I'm with you. I'm going to take the under. Mm-hmm. I would even say like there's going to be less than 15 trades this year. For what you said in the first question, there's too many teams that are sort of in the mix. Like Nashville all of a sudden is in the mix now, and it really is just like the Penguins who are completely out of it that a lot of people are kind of circling the wagons around. So, yeah, I don't think this is going to be an overly active deadline day.
Mm.
I will take the over because nothing has happened. I think teams are going to panic on deadline day.
Fair.
All right. Even though it feels like half the league have fired their coaches at this point, I have to ask the question, who's the next coach on the hot seat?
I'll go Mike Sullivan in Pittsburgh. I'm not blaming him for what's happened, but I think it's one of those situations where if the Penguins miss the playoffs, someone's got to take the fall.
Originally, I was going to say Sheldon Keefe. Now I'm thinking it might be Buffalo with Don Granato. And with Lindy Ruff now available, could we see a reunion with Ruff in Buffalo?
A Ruff union.
I like that.
Ooh.
Boo.
I know. I did that for you, or I guess more accurately, to you.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Yeah.
Dad jokes are through the roof. Evgeny Kuznetsov cleared waivers on the weekend. Do you see this being the end of his NHL career, or could you see this being an incredible redemption story?
I'm going to go incredible redemption story because I'm a big fan of Kuznetsov.
Me
he's
too.
Always been fun to interview, and when he's on his game, he's such an exciting player. Is he going to be that top-line center that he was not too long ago? No, but I still think the talent's there. He just needs a reset, and I'm glad that he was getting the help that he needed off the ice.
I'm with you, Ryan, and I think a team like Tampa might be the perfect kind of scenario where he can just kind of fill in as a, what are you thinking, third, second-line center?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a...
Got to be a scoring role.
Yeah, I think there's more to him. I think if he ends his career now, I'm kind of looking at it going, he didn't really kind of get to that spot where I thought, because he always flirted with superstar status in my mind.
Yep.
All right, two real quick ones. Max Comtois signed a contract with Carolina, and Aaron Dell signed with LA through the end of the season. Yes or no, do you see them having an impact on their NHL teams?
No. Comtois maybe as a depth guy, but that's it.
I'm going to echo what Ryan said. Those don't excite me at all.
All right. Final question. Where can people go for trade deadline coverage on Friday?
TheHockeyNews.com is the only place to go.
Yeah, we will be shooting videos. We will be breaking down trades. We will be responding to rumors. Hey, we might even break something. Maybe not something physical. Listen, this was all we got, all the time we've got for the Hockey News pregame show. Thank you to Upper Deck. That's Ryan Kennedy. I'm Michael Trakos. We'll see you next time at the rink.